Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
We cannot now, at this point, have fall NCAA championships because there's not enough schools participating. The board also established, Board of Governors also said, look, if you don't have half of the schools playing a sport, you can't have a legitimate championship. So we can't in any Division I NCAA championship sport now, which is everything other than FBS football that goes on in the fall. So sadly, tragically, that's going to be the case this fall, you know, full stop. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't and can't turn toward winter and spring and say, okay, how can we create a legitimate championship for all those students?
That was NCAA President Mark Emmert talking about the cancellation of fall championships this year because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Welcome back in. Morning Drive, Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. And Joe, it came out yesterday, the NCAA announcing that no fall championships will take place this year except for FBS football, which is still at the moment on the table. We'll see how that goes. But that's still on the table at the moment. What was your reaction when you saw this news?
Well, I wasn't surprised by this. It's just another, you know, just another domino that kind of tells us we may be headed toward just toward no college sports at all until at least January. As you said, the thing with college athletics is football is just, it's a different thing. The NCAA does not put together the football championship. You know, that's a separate thing, the college football playoff. There's so many things about this. I think actually like the general public has learned a lot about how messed up the system is through the COVID-19 pandemic. And one of those things is, I mean, seriously, $4 million a year for Mark Emmert. And basically,
nice job if you can get it.
The thing that he's worked hardest at right now, which again to me is just mind-boggling given all that we are seeing all around, is just working hard to keep this name, image, likeness thing as limited as possible. He fought against it forever and ever, and now it's reality that states are passing these laws. And so he's still, you know, working hard for to try to, you know, keep college athletes from making a few bucks off autographs. I mean, that's basically the productivity we're getting out of Mark Emmert. And as we've seen through all this stuff with college football, the NCAA has been putting out statements that are like, really hope you guys figure it out and go, we're with you. We're with you all the way. But this move is just sort of an expected move to kind of illustrate if there are sports this fall, there will be some football in some leagues.
And Emmert went on to have a little bit more to say about the cancellation of fall championships with the NCAA. Here's what he had to say.
My staff's been working hard on it, been talking to a lot of commissioners, all the commissioners, all 32 of them in D1. And there are ways to do this. I'm completely confident that we can figure this out. If schools and conferences want to move forward and try and have, and more than half of them want to do it, and that's surely the indication right now, then let's do it. We can use the fall, as I said, to keep kids healthy, keep them engaged with their coaches and their athletic departments, focus on their academic success, you know, work with them and let them practice and you know, stay ready to play. Then let's go compete at that time. A couple things have to occur, Andy, and there's one that's really, really important. We have to give highest priority to the winter and spring sports, because they lost their championship last March. We made that horrible, awful, but necessary choice to shut down, didn't have Frozen Four, didn't have Final Fours, didn't have World Series in softball and baseball or track championships, lacrosse. We lost all of that. We got to say, first and foremost, we're going to protect those spaces. But then when we look at it and say, look, if we modify the model, which we need to do anyway because of the virus, if we modify the model, shrink the bracket sizes, do everything in predetermined sites instead of running kids around the country, use predetermined sites, move toward bubbles or semi-bubble models in volleyball, let's say, or soccer, There's a way to do it. Will it be normal? Of course not. You'll be playing a fall sport in the spring. Will it create other conflicts and challenges? Of course. But is it doable? Yeah, it is doable. And we want to do that. We want to, again, make it work for these students.
That was NCAA President Mark Emmert. And Joe, I hear that, and we got a great text message in on the text line. It says, maybe Mr. Emmert could use a cameo from Jared as a pickup after that.
All right, who gave us that one?
The name is not here, but if you sent that text in, send me your name, because that was great.
Yeah, you need public recognition for that one.
Maybe that is what they're missing. You just need to call Stillman, make him make a minute. How long are these videos anyway?
I don't know.
5 minutes?
But by the way, yeah.
Give him a video to Mark Emmert, and then we could solve these problems. We could figure out sports, moving these fall championships to the spring. That's fine. We can figure them out, and we can maintain the integrity of the winter and spring sports as well. All we need is the cameo from Stillman.
You know,
we've discovered it here. Let's send this to Emmert.
I love it. Ian needs to play cameo word up as every bump song from now on until eternity for Stillman Show.
Yes.
Cameo, word up. Jared Stillman and cameo are now synonymous.
Oh, it's incredible. Oh, it's Ultimate Predator.
Oh, Ultimate. Good job, Ultimate
yes.
Predator. Well done. Well done.
That was awesome.
Yeah, well, so an interesting thing there, Robbie, on Emmert is talking about the bubbles, which he's right.
Sure. I mean, we've kind of discovered at this point, if you're going to have these longer-term playoff championship runs, you almost have to have a bubble. Like, it's got to be that way.
You know, we had Gary Parrish on yesterday. We were talking some college hoops. We had Dana O'Neill and Gary Parrish, and both of them really optimistic. I know we're going to get into more of the bubble thing too later, but the incredible thing is, like, for all of Emmert's just, you know, falling all over himself and like, what are you doing here? Larry Scott from the Pac-12, man,
oh,
that guy.
God.
I mean, he seriously comes out and says, no, the bubble can't work. Like, everyone else is saying, look
around, man.
I mean, hey, my guy Dan Wolkin takes a lot of crap and, you know, some of it undeserved. I mean, he wrote a column a few weeks ago, like, the NBA bubble is going to be a total disaster. A lot of people thought that. Well, it works. So this has to be an option. It has to be really a strategy for the NCAA. And, like, but Larry Scott somehow is just not, I don't know, maybe he doesn't follow sports.
The biggest part about all this and the most confusing part has been, like, what is the purpose of Mark Emmert? Like, what does he do? Because he's talking about the authority and the lack of authority that he has in the Power Five. Like, that's what I've been trying to figure out through this whole thing. Is like, what are you doing? What are you even there for? This is what he had to say about having really no authority on the Power Five in college football.
I get that people want simple answers. I get that it's frustrating that some conferences are playing and some aren't, you know, right now. That's just the way it has to be to do this inside college sports. It's not right or wrong or better or worse. And when people say, well, if we just had a czar that come in and say, we're going to make a decision, that'll be it. You know, history, if it's taught us anything, people love the concept of a czar. They hate czars. Authoritarianism is a really fun concept. It just sucks when people actually have to live under it. And so, sure, it's fun to talk about, but nobody that ever advocates it actually lived inside it.
Yeah, so just to be very clear here, you could not tell the SEC, as you, Mark Emmert, or any NCAA president, you can't play college football.
That's correct. We have no authority to do that. And you know, we don't have authority to say to a school, yeah, okay, we know that your conference isn't playing, but if you want to go ahead and play over here, I may think that's a silly idea, but it's not up to me. It's not up to anybody. That school has its own authority to do that. Now, its conference colleagues could say, you know, if you do that, we're going to throw you out of the conference. That's fine. But they still can do what they want there. That's never been the prerogative of the NCAA. And in my opinion, it never should be.
So what is Mark Emmert doing? What's he there for?
Dude, what is Big Mark here for?
What's he making $4 million for?
Like, what does he do? What is he here for? If you can't control the Power Five conferences who play under the NCAA's rules and protocols, then what the hell do we have you for?
Well, but we knew this, right?
I mean, yes. we did, but
I mean, I like that he's taking this to like authoritarian regimes, yeah, you know, in the real world.
It's
like,
just okay, funny hearing
this is like 70 Soviet Russia out there. Yeah. So like, what are we doing here?
It's just funny hearing from him that, oh, I have no control over this. But if Todd Gurley's out here, you know, signing autographs, Call me up.
I'll bring it in there.
There's two functions. They got two functions. And that is, one is that, the punitive investigative arm. So that's what people think of the NCAA. They do that. And, of course, they really don't have any power. They don't have subpoena power. No. So we get a bunch of, you know, shoddy investigations that really don't lead anywhere. And at times, penalties that are way overreaching, at times too weak, whatever. Like, UNC has fake classes. Fine. You know, carry on. But then they set up championships. They set up championships. That's it. I mean, and so I agree with him, though. Like, the czar, even though he took it to a weird place, if you had a college football commissioner, I've been saying this over and over again, university presidents are still going to say, oh, hi, little college football commissioner. Now I'm going to decide what happens in the world. That's right. The crazy thing about college athletics is that it then goes to these presidents who, some of them hate sports, and they certainly don't see eye to eye often with sports. Again, there's so many things about this system that don't really work, that are dysfunctional, and now we're seeing how it all plays out when in the middle of a pandemic.
When we come back, how will a bubble system for the NCAA work, and do we think that's the route they should go? We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I think it's perfectly viable in many sports. It's harder in FCS football, for example. But if you had smaller brackets, so starting with 64 teams is tough. 32's okay. That's maybe a manageable number. 16's certainly manageable. But you got to figure out, again, those logistics. There's doubtlessly ways to make that work. Joni Comstock, our senior VP for championships, and Danny Gavitt, who oversees basketball, they're working on all that really, really hard right now with all of the conferences and the oversight committees and the champs committees to see what that would look like, how you can manage the economics of it. It's obviously expensive to do that. But we're not going to hold a championship in a way that puts student athletes at risk. If we need to do a bubble model and that's the only way we can do it, then we'll figure that out.
That was NCAA President Mark Emmert talking about a potential bubble model with championship sports in the world of college sports. Welcome back in Morning Drive, Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. And Joe, it's a little bit of a different conversation with the NCAA, obviously, than in pro sports like the NHL, like the NBA. There's some economics that go into it in terms of putting together a bubble model. Let's say, for instance, March Madness, the NCAA tournament. If you're going to have a bubble model to do that, and let's just say the field is still 68 teams, that's a ton of teams and a ton of money you're going to have to pour into that to make sure this bubble, number one, stays secure, but number two, it accommodates everybody involved. So that's a huge undertaking for the NCAA. How should the NCAA handle potentially pursuing a bubble system if we get to that point and that's the route they have to go for their championships?
Well, first, let's talk about the money. You're talking about a tournament that brings in almost $1 billion every year, yep. $900 million. So it's worth it. You're going to do it. And this idea that there's not money, oh, there's money. Now, people are going to lose their jobs right now in college athletics. Sports are going to get cut.
Yep.
Real quick, I'm going to go back to a Dan Wetzel column from a few years ago about the University of Michigan. Okay, this is an example of how you could kind of look at college athletics like an enterprise where you're hiding money. I mean, it's almost like if you've watched the show Breaking Bad,
yeah.
You know, they have to buy the car wash to clean the money. So University of Michigan, he just picked on them, but there's this has happened in a lot of places. Over about a four-year period, they increased their staff size by 26.5%. So basically added like 100 people in their athletics staff with good salaries. And it's basically like to show that zero balance, where are you putting the money? You're putting in facilities, obviously, these palatial, unbelievable facilities that you're building to recruit kids. I mean, you go to some of these campuses or some of these football buildings, it's unbelievable. But then there's also this, you know, coaches' salaries – we talk about that a lot. They've gone crazy. Coordinators making millions now. Position coaches making $700K, okay? That's up drastically. But think about adding jobs, too, and just coming up with jobs. And here, $100K here, $100K there. I mean, so this
is... Butch Jones down to Alabama, man. Come on.
Right.
Intern.
And of course, how many people are getting paid to not work in college athletics, too? But so the money can be found, will be found. Now the logistics. That's the that is interesting. I think Emmert mentioned there, and there's already been some plans. Like our Dana O'Neill had an awesome plan, actually, for the regular season of little bubbles, where you'd have eight teams. It'd be after school ends, after Thanksgiving. Yep. So now you can bubble them up. Then you can not have to worry about the charade of they're just regular students. Bubble them up and you play a round robin, because you have to have games to pick teams. Like, you have to have a season first, some kind of a season in college basketball. I don't see it happening before January or maybe something like this. But obviously, we know the Pac-12's not playing.
No.
They've already said so. I think other leagues will follow suit. But the bubble, I think you'd have to probably pick places that would just be the location for the whole time. Almost like, how the NHL, on a smaller scale, they've got two bubbles and then eventually they'll all be in Edmonton.
Right.
I think the NCAA, it would be like, you have four bubbles. Maybe you do 2 weeks. You cut it all the way down from, about 16 or 17, whatever. Play-in games, you have those or whatever. You cut that down to one team at each of those four sites, and then one of those four sites is where you have your final four. I think so. So it wouldn't be like, obviously, now where you're moving all over the country. You'd cut it down, but I think you could absolutely make that work. Is it expensive? Sure. Are the student athletes going to have to study remotely? Already do every March. They're on the road all the time if you go 3 weeks. So it's an expense that is well worth it for a lot of reasons. One of them being this country cannot possibly go another spring without March Madness.
The problem with the football part of this is the same problem they have in the NFL, in my opinion, and that is there's too many people. There's way too many people involved on a college football team to make a bubble work. So if college football is going to be played, and it's going to be played with any sense of normalcy in terms of how we're used to seeing it, and you've almost gotten to the point where if you're going to have fans in the stands, you're going to have a vaccine, or it's going to have to get to a point in our country where the virus is so manageable that you feel comfortable if you're all these conferences putting your kids out there. Like, I understand we might see something in the fall still from the SEC, the ACC, whatever. I still think it's kind of doubtful. But the football part of this, the bubble to me, just it's impossible. It just can't happen. Like, if the NFL is not doing it, it's going to be almost impossible for college football to do it.
Yeah, well, it would be super expensive. Now, everybody's got a plan. Amy Trask wrote up an interesting plan for football that involved being in Los Angeles, where of course, the virus is really bad again, by the way. Yeah. But that involved kind of a bubble, and you've got a lot of different fields out there. You could stage it kind of like the bubbles now. You got the same sort of arena or ice or court, and you're doing multiple games, in a day, these various fields. But like you said, it's a lot of people. It's a huge cost. I'm not surprised the NFL didn't do it. They may wish they did it once we get into mid-October, depending on how things go. And maybe, like with the NFL, I could see the plans had better be underway already, Robbie, but I could see maybe a playoff bubble for the NFL. Again, if it looks like, you're not going to have, home field and it's just not looking good for fans, we don't have any big positive developments on the virus, some kind of a playoff situation to lock everyone down and make sure you play those playoff games.
We had Gary Parrish join us yesterday on Morning Drive to talk about this situation. Here's what he had to say.
The idea that you, quote, can't bubble up college basketball players simply isn't true. It's why it was frustrating when the Pac-12 commissioner, Larry Scott, actually said that a couple of days ago. Well, you can't have college sports in a bubble. Really? Why? Why can't you? There's not a law against it. There's not a rule against it. And as you point out, lots of college athletes do remote learning. if you are going to do remote learning, and by the way, lots of students right now do remote learning. The big secret is that college athletes have been doing remote learning for years. But like now everybody's doing remote learning. Like my first grader starts school on Monday. He will start it from an extra bedroom in our home that we have turned into a classroom. So if my first grader can learn remotely, what is so inappropriate under these circumstances about a basketball player learning remotely? What is so wild about a basketball player being 200 or even 2,000 miles from campus when every other student's going to be some distance from campus as well on lots of campuses across this country? So I just reject the idea that you can't do it. We can brainstorm about the proper ways to do it. But can you do it? Absolutely you can, and I'll take it a step further. They will. It might not be the plan I propose. It might not happen on the schedule that I propose. But I feel comfortable telling you that college basketball will be played in the 2020-21 season and that it will be played at least in part in something that looks a lot like a bubble.
That was Gary Parrish from CBS Sports yesterday on Morning Drive. And Joe, he hit on something there that has been driving me nuts. And that is this idea that, you know, if you're student athletes and you're playing college football or college basketball, you got to go to class, you got to be surrounded by all these people, and then you got to go play. No, you don't. You can do things remotely now. It's very easy. I mean, we do it all the time. We've been doing it as a society the last 6 months. It's very easy to do things remotely now. And people have just washed that aside as if that's not important. That could be huge when you're having a conversation like this involving sports. You know, you want them to be as limited as possible in terms of the people that they're interacting with to reduce the chances of the spread of the virus. It's very simple. You're going to be involved with your team. If you're playing together, you're practicing together, you're watching film, you're training, all these things, you're going to be around those people all the time. Why not try to learn remotely and limit whoever else you're around, even if your school is going back to in-person classes? Look, I understand that that's a benefit that these college athletes may get over other students. I just think it's dumb. You got to be smart about this. You can learn remotely. You can learn online. You can do it via Zoom. There are many different ways you can do it. So that part has drove me nuts about this conversation.
I mean, it just cut the crap. Anyone who's still trying to argue that. And look, I've covered nothing more in my career than the NCAA tournament. I've covered that more than anything else. These kids, if you're in that tournament, let's say you play on a Saturday, you get home at 2 a.m. Sunday, and then you're back, you're practicing for the next week, and you are going right back on a flight on Tuesday for your Thursday game. You get there Tuesday night, then you practice Wednesday. You are learning remotely already.
Yep.
Flat out. So basically it's like a day and a half at home. I'm sure, you know, you're rushing to all your classes then. I mean, come on. It's a joke. These people are different, okay? They are not the exact same as the students. That's already true in the facilities that they work out in, at the facilities in a lot of cases that they live in. Go look at Kentucky's dorms for basketball players. I mean, it's already a different world. So do the smart thing. Stop pretending and make it possible to have sports.
No question about it. I mean, that thing is just, that's drove me nuts. People have been talking about that for 2 months. Oh, you got to go to class? No, you don't. Just learn remotely.
Yeah.
So it's very simple.
I mean, honestly, I'll say it over and over again. I can't understand how the Big Ten gets rid of football and is going to have students in classes. If it's a safety issue, if it's a liability issue, whatever it is, how are you justifying ending this right now and then come on to campus, kids? Everything's safe. It doesn't make sense.
When we come back, we'll dive into some Grizzlies talk. A big win yesterday against the Milwaukee Bucks. Mark Giannotto from the Commercial Appeal will join us next on the show. Looking forward to that. But first, rocknashville.com is your community resource page. Check it out for information around town, including Nashville's Good to Go initiatives, CDC updates, ways to help the Middle Tennessee community. That's rocknashville.com. We'll be right back with Mark Giannotto here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Friday morning. It was a big win yesterday for the Memphis Grizzlies against the Bucks. They've got the play-in game this Saturday against Portland, and if they win that game, we'll play again on Sunday. And to help us talk a little bit more about that, we bring in
Mark Giannotto from the Commercial Appeal. Mark, how's it going?
Oh, not bad. Just getting ready for another do-or-die game for the Grizzlies, I guess, tomorrow.
It's become old hat, right?
Yeah, I guess. Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting. They're in an interesting spot because, you know, they entered this bubble with a 3.5-game lead on everyone. They squandered it partly because of, you know, they've suffered some pretty significant injuries since the restart began, but also because, you know, they showed their age a little bit. They've been playing over their heads the entire season. And you know, this is what happens when you're led by a 20-year-old who just turned 21 a week ago. Yeah, this is all a learning experience for them. And so I think it's good that they may – I don't know if they're going to be able to take down Portland given how well Damian Lillard's playing, but it's going to be a good experience for them because – and that's really what this season's about because I think a lot – you know, it's funny listening to the national media. You heard, like, Charles Barkley yesterday lamenting that Damian Lillard is not going against Devin Booker, and I think – maybe some people are losing perspective on the Grizzlies were expected to be the worst team in the Western Conference. And the fact that they're in this play-in game, the fact that they made it to the bubble at all, frankly, is pretty remarkable and a testament to the young team that they've got, the young promising team that they've got.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, look, Devin Booker has been amazing. The Suns have been amazing. But, of course, they were also in the position where they had to be amazing to have a shot at this, right? I mean, people are talking about them like it's a big crime that they're, you know, missing the postseason. But that's the position they put themselves in. And I will tell you, Mark, when Jaren Jackson went down, first of all, it's terrible for him and it's, you know, obviously terrible for this team. And I said, yeah, okay, well, they're done. They're not going to win a game, and they're going to go home. And it's still, hey, like you said, an overachieving year, a surprising year. What would you say? I know, like yesterday, Dylan Brooks goes nuts. Valanciunas has a triple-double to go with Ja Morant. But if you could point to maybe anything other than, you know, the top players, how would you say they've figured this out here to get themselves in this position?
Well, I'm going to be honest. Yesterday was Giannis wasn't playing because he got suspended for headbutting Mo Wagner, the Wizard. And then, frankly, if you watch the game, the Grizzlies were treating it like a Game 7, and the Bucks treated it like a preseason game. So that helps.
It helps.
Yeah, and then they beat Oklahoma City. They had a good game against Oklahoma City where they played three good quarters. And that's really, I mean, frankly, the problem the Grizzlies have had in the bubble is, yes, they lose Jaren Jackson Jr. Justice Winslow, who was their big trade deadline acquisition, never played a game for him, got hurt in the practices leading into the game. And then an injury that goes under the radar a little bit is Tyus Jones,
right.
Has not played a game in the bubble. And he's their backup point guard. But why that's important is it's forced Ja Morant to play more minutes than he did before the season was suspended. He was playing more like 28 to 30 minutes during the regular, you know, before the restart. And here in the bubble, he's been playing 35 to 40 minutes. And I think at times you can tell it's a lot on him. And especially now that Jaren Jackson Jr. is out, there's just a lot of he has to do a lot. And but at the same time, even when Jaren was healthy, he was playing really well. But the team hasn't quite looked right since the restart began. They don't look quite like the team that really went on a surge in January and February, but they've done enough. I mean, they're in the playing game, and I think really, you know, they played three good quarters against Oklahoma City. Yesterday they played very well with their backs against the wall, and frankly, just the way the NBA restart was set up, that was enough because they had the 3.5 game lead and there were only 8 games. I mean, when you think about it, it's really hard to give up a 3.5 game lead over 8 games, no matter what sport you're talking about, whether it's hockey or basketball or baseball. And the Grizzlies did that. Now, luckily, they won yesterday, and so they're gonna still get to play in the play-in game. But frankly, they haven't really played that well in the bubble until yesterday. And yesterday even comes with kind of a big asterisk because, like I said, it did not seem the Bucks did not care about that game whatsoever.
Mark Giannotto from the Commercial Appeal on the line with us. And, Mark, we've talked a lot about Ja Morant here on the show, but if you're a casual NBA fan that's listening here in Nashville and you've never seen Ja Morant play before, why should you watch the game on Saturday?
Oh, I mean, because he does something every game that makes you go, wow, whether it's, the thing that sticks out more than anything is the dunks, the alley-oops, the highlight reel plays. But if you watch him on a consistent basis, why he's the rookie of the year, I think he's got the chance to be the biggest star to ever play for the Grizzlies, he's not just an athlete. He's got this natural feel for the game. He's a wonderful passer. He's a great leader. He just has it all, it feels like. He's got that it factor that there's very few players in the league that they have it. He's shown a knack for coming up. You know, they call him fourth quarter Ja here. If you look at the stats from the season, he's a guy, I think he ranks in the top 8 in the league in terms of points per fourth quarter in the NBA. He's got a lot of different things going for him. And he just turned 21 years old. And so I think part of the reason why Memphis loves him is one, he really fits the city. I mean, he's a small town guy himself. And so I think it was a really good match there. He has the potential to be the type of superstar who is going to be happy to stay in Memphis long term. The other thing is just, he isn't even a 3-point shooter yet. There's a lot of ways his game can go. And I think he's the first player the Grizzlies have had who it feels like, you know, the grit and grind era with the core four, like Mike Conley, Marc Gasol, Zach Randolph, Tony Allen, like they were fantastic. But those guys weren't superstars. They were more a team that was better, almost like better than the sum of its parts. Ja, on the other hand, feels like he's the first Grizzlies player who can truly be a NBA superstar eventually. Like, I don't know if he'll get there, but he's got the potential to do that. And Memphis has never had that since the Grizzlies came to town.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the shooting, Mark. Obviously, teams are going to go under on those ball screens until he proves otherwise. But I loved yesterday how he attacked and played that little floater game. He's a joy to watch. And on the subject of why to watch, also Damian Lillard is a good reason too. Oh, I'm excited about these games. Moving forward, I agree with you. I think there's some nice pieces. I really like Brandon Clark, too. I really like what he can be. It feels like if they could find that legit big-time wing to go with some of what else they have, they could really have something. And, again, no disrespect to Dylan Brooks. He was incredible yesterday, 31 points. You know, if he plays like that, I think they could win any game. I mean, I hear you on the Bucks not caring, but like I was like, man, if Dylan Brooks played like that. But I'm sure, Mark, in your job, you get a lot of mentions on Dylan Brooks and shot selection. And, of course, yeah. That's also disregarding he's important on the defensive end. But would you agree that, you know, that wing piece, if they can figure something out there, could really take them to another level?
Yeah, I think this bubble experience has kind of shined a light on, like, Dylan Brooks is a really nice player, but if the way I like to think about it with the Grizzlies is, you know, ultimately they're way ahead of schedule. You know, even if they get blown out by the Trailblazers, even if they hadn't made the play-in game, that wasn't going to change the fact that they accomplished more. They were, again, predicted to be maybe the worst team in the Western Conference, and they're going to come out of this season knowing, you know what, we've got our two stars for the next, hopefully, decade in Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. And then you've got this other piece in Brandon Clark, who's turned into, you know, maybe the biggest steal of the first round of the NBA draft this past year. But I think you're right. Like, I think Dylan Brooks, for instance, if we're thinking about this as, you know, what are the Grizzlies going to look like in 2 to 3 years when I think they hope to be actual contenders in the Western Conference? I think Dylan Brooks is on that team. I just think it's more as like your sixth man, you know, guy who can fill it up off the bench for you, almost like a better defending version of Lou Williams, maybe, hopefully, something like that, but like a sixth man. And I think you're right. I think they need to find that third piece to go along with John Jaren. And maybe it's Justice Winslow. I think that's, you know, the way his contract works, next year is essentially going to be a tryout for Justice Winslow. I don't know if he's quite that guy either. My gut tells me that player is not on the roster right now. And what's going to be interesting is traditionally the Grizzlies have had to build teams, you know, via trade and via the draft, because free agents don't necessarily want to come to Memphis. And what's going to be interesting to me is, because of the presence of Ja and Jaren, and particularly Ja, will that change? Will that, you know, will that make Memphis a better destination for free agents? Or will this be something that they need to do via trade? Or, you know, will it be something that, you know, hopefully that maybe they get someone in the draft? That's what's going to be interesting down the line here. Because to me, you've got your best two, and now it's about who's going to surround them long term. That's what the Grizzlies need to find. They need to find that, like you mentioned, that wing, which has been a perpetual search for the franchise, dating back to when they drafted Rudy Gay. They really have never had that great wing. They tried to get one in Chandler Parsons, and that was a disaster. And so. We'll see what this front office does. This front office did a fantastic job. I mean, they skipped steps in the rebuild. I mean, usually when you get rid of pillars like the Grizzlies did, like Mike Conley and Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph and Tony Allen, there's some painful, painful years after that. And they went through a painful year here or there. You know, like the year before this and the year before that were not great, but it hasn't been as painful as most people expected. This year has been a lot of fun. And now it feels like, you know, at the very least, they're going to be contending for the playoffs as long as John and Jaren are together. The question is, can they get to that, you know, elite, you know, can they be a top four team in the Western Conference? I think they're going to need to add some pieces. And like you said, that third piece and a wing especially is paramount to that.
No question about it. Mark Giannotto from the Commercial Appeal has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Mark, thanks so much for taking time to join us, man. We appreciate it.
Hey, no problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. When we come back, we'll continue to react a little bit to what Mark had to say there and look ahead to the Grizzlies' big matchup against Portland tomorrow. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Just, you know, learning everything. I'm still learning to this day. Actually, I was talking with Anthony Tolliver one night by the pool, and he was just explaining, you know, he has a lot of years on his belt, and like some of the stuff he be telling me, sometimes, you know, I don't understand because I haven't been in the league, but he finally, you know, actually had the time to explain it. But me, you know, being a rookie, being in the position that I'm in with my team, I was saying all along my goal this year was to be better than I was at the beginning of the season. And do whatever I can to, you know, help my team win, be an impact. And I feel like my play this year is pretty good. Obviously, it can be better in areas, but I'm going to just continue, you know, just being me and do whatever I can to try to help my team win basketball games.
That was Ja Morant from the Memphis Grizzlies, which, by the way, Joe, he thinks his play has been pretty good this year.
I would have to agree.
I think Ja
thinks he's been okay.
Yeah, I think Ja's been all right.
He's been all right.
Yeah,
all right. It's all right.
He's been all right. He's the easy rookie of the year.
Oh, yeah. The fact that turned into a conversation between him and Zion is ridiculous.
Well, I mean, look.
He played 20 games.
Yes. Zion would have had to. And the thing is, the voting happened before the bubble anyways. It didn't matter. But if you could have gone to the end, if Zion dominated in the bubble and was like triple-double guy every night, and then the Grizzlies fall off, maybe some people are swayed.
Best ability is availability, my friend.
This is a good point.
The old adage.
That's very true.
I'm looking forward to watching this game. Like, are y'all excited about this game against Portland? I think it's awesome. Like, I'm really just hoping they push it to Sunday. I don't have a whole lot of confidence that Memphis is going to win both games because they've got to win Saturday and Sunday to advance to the playoffs. I'm just hoping they push it to Sunday and get one from the Blazers.
No, it is exciting that they've got something this weekend because obviously the playoffs start next week. I'm excited with anything involving Portland these days because it's been incredible to watch Damian Lillard. And like last night,
From the logo.
My 12-year-old was still up watching the Blazers because he's kind of shifting from Steph Curry stan to Dame stan. But I wake up and I'm like, oh my gosh, 134, 133. And he hit a late shot and got a late steal. And I got to go to bed. But no, I'm really excited about this. He's on an absolute tear. And I think they'll probably beat the Grizzlies. But I'm with you. It would be cool to see two games, Saturday and Sunday. Saturday, 1:30. Sunday, do we know when that would be?
No.
We don't know yet.
That has not been announced.
Okay. I'm excited.
Now, as far as the future of the Grizzlies is concerned, we got a text in on the text line. It says, who can the Grizzlies trade to get a big three with Anthony Davis? He will not be staying in L.A. when the Blazers win round one in six games. So we got a hot take there. Got the Blazers over the Lakers in round one.
Well, technically, they wouldn't have to trade for Anthony Davis.
Yeah, he'd be a
free agent. So they wouldn't have to give away anybody. But if you want to – and plus they got cap space because they got young players on their team who are still on rookie deals. But if you wanted to make a big deal for somebody, if I'm a team and you're going to trade me, and probably Jaren Jackson's probably going to be off the board for the Grizzlies. They'll probably throw their hands up like, look, he's untouchable. You know, Ja Morant's untouchable, those two guys.
Right.
Maybe a guy like Valanciunas, who's been good this year, but they got also a team's going to want some upside, so they're going to want Brandon Clark.
Yeah.
So if you're going to want to build a big three and make that possible for a trade, Brandon Clark's going to have to be in the deal because every team wants a young player with tremendous upside, and that's what Brandon Clark has.
He's a really nice player.
So it's going to have to be like a Brandon Clark, a Valanciunas, and maybe something else for if you want like a star player.
I mean, Anthony Davis would not consider signing with Memphis.
Nope.
Right?
That's ultimately my biggest question with this group. Like, it's not going to happen now. It's probably not going to happen in the next two or three years. But once Ja Morant gets to be 25, 26 years old, is he good enough and will he be good enough to make Memphis a desirable free agent destination? It's the smallest market in the league. They've never been able to attract huge name free agents. We all know that. Will he be good enough to attract a big-name guy to Memphis? Because that's going to be really hard, I think.
If he wants to stay and he keeps growing as a player, I think you could look at him and say, I could win a championship with that guy. I think that's it. And now that's the other thing for Memphis is, are they going to keep him long-term? You know, can they lock him up? He may want to go somewhere else at some point. I think Mark brought up a good point about how he likes it there. He fits well there. That's big. They've got to do everything around him to keep him happy. Anthony Davis, a lot of him wanting out of New Orleans was just moves they made that didn't work, right? I mean, he's like, I need to go somewhere, you know, where I feel like I can win. So I don't know, Robbie. That's a good question. But he could be good enough to attract people.
I will say that he could, especially this free agent class. Now, these two guys aren't stars. They're not mega big names like a LeBron or Anthony Davis. But if you can try to pull out a guy like DeMar DeRozan for example, is going to be a free agent this year. Oof. Or if you try to get, you know, Brandon Ingram, who you can fill that gap in that small forward position so you can have a lineup with Jaren Jackson, Brandon Ingram, and John Morant, which it'll pretty much be like the Pelicans and what they look like now, but, you know, you get Brandon Ingram on a team that, quite frankly, may make the playoffs. So get a guy like DeMar DeRozan who can fit that small forward spot and then match him up with John Morant, and then you can move Dylan Brooks to a six-man role. Like, I think you have a pretty good lineup there. So
that's a top four team in the West. I'm sorry, it is.
Yeah, so it's not the fact that they need a big name. It's not like, because the Grizzlies have never been the team that got big names. They built their team on having a guy like Zach Randolph, Mark Gasol, Tony Allen, and Mike Conley. So it's not necessarily that they need to get a star player to get to that hump. They just need to fill the gaps that they're missing at. And I think they're missing right now at shooting guard, which I think Dylan Brooks is really good, but I don't think he's starter good. No. I don't think he's a starter in the league. He's good off the bench. So if they can get a guy like DeMar DeRozan or Brandon Ingram, that can fit their team well, and they can be a top. We won't have a play-in tournament conversation when it comes to the Grizzlies because they'll be in contention for maybe a sixth spot, maybe even a top four spot.
Let's hope we never have a play-in conversation at all.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I don't want play-in games.
They won't be
whack.
Well, I mean, I'll take it
this year.
I'll take
this
it
year,
tomorrow.
I'll take it. But
yeah, but no, I don't think they'll be on the cut line. That would be either of those guys would be a huge pickup. But yeah, if it's a trade, I would think those guys would be untouchable. Those top two guys, and Clark is the appealing asset. But I would not want to let him go either.
Because
he's going to be really good.
Someone asked me, like, what about like a guy like Ben Simmons? I'm like, no, you don't want Ben Simmons because Ben Simmons just doesn't fit what you need on offense.
You
like,
have to shoot.
Like you have to shoot. Yeah. You need a shooter. Brandon Ingram, DeMar DeRozan has got better at shooting too. And those guys are shooters. You need a shooter to surround John Morant.
Especially because John Morant's not really a shooter now.
Right.
Absolutely. So you don't want and plus John Morant and Ben Simmons play the exact same game. They're both point guards, pass first guys who really cannot shoot. So it's you don't want to have both of those guys on the court at the same time.
John can shoot better than Ben, but yes.
Yeah, he can't shoot better than Ben because he actually shoots. Ben does not. Ben does not take those chances. He does not take those risks.
It's amazing to see what he's done in this league without a jump shot. That's how good he is otherwise.
Joe, real quickly before we get to Teron Davenport in the next segment. Titans, you're available to watch today. This is an exciting day for you, Rex Road.
Well, it is, except classic 2020. There's a good chance we get rained out today. And if we do get rained out and they get moved inside, that would mean that it's a pool report from a pool reporter. One of three possible. No, there are three reporters who are getting tested every day out there. So Teron's one of them, Teresa Walker from the AP, Eric Bacharach from the Tennessee, and I believe that's the only three. So two of them, I think, would just go in, watch. The rest of us would not get to watch. So that would be a classic 2020 development that we would not get to go to practice. But, yes, today is supposed to be the first media practice. I've been super excited. I got my bucket hat. Like, I'm ready to go in case it happens. But I keep looking at the forecast, and yeah.
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 Well, look.
2020.
At least like with Titans practices, NFL practices, you learn a lot of things from those practices. I feel like, you know, NBA, NHL, MLB, you don't learn hardly anything from practices. Except maybe a line combination in the NHL. That's about it.
Yeah, no, the practices are good. And I think actually Mike Vrabel has said this. I think the practices here are going to be a little bit more action-packed just because they don't have preseason games. So actually the practice watching portion of this all might be better. And we'll have a lot of opportunities. This is the start of media being able to go. So to me, this is kind of the start of quote-unquote camp. They have started to actually practice. They're kind of gone through the testing and all the protocols, and now we get to some actual football.
When we come back, we'll dive into some actual football with Teron Davenport, ESPN, NFL Nation Titans reporter. That's next. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Here on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.